I had to turn off my phone.
Oh, okay, good. That's a good idea. You know, we're like almost ready. Here we are.
Yeah, you just used to take it up and look.
Okay, good. We're live. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another Quarantine Moms from the Moms Can Relate page. Hello to all of our loyalists, everybody who's following us since day one, and they've been following us throughout this entire series. I am particularly excited about my interview today. I'm particularly excited about the topic as well, survive and thrive, because when I think about those two words, I think about this lady. For very first time, you know, trust me, and she's for real, real. So, welcome to our Quarantine Mom series, Jodi and Gray. How are you, honey?
I am good, Debbie. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure to see you where you are right now. When I look on Instagram and I look at the things that I'm able to see and I see you, I remember the days when I said, Debbie, I think you need to move from behind the camera and go in front of the camera. It's amazing to see how you've grown. I'm so proud of you.
You did. You remember those days we used to write together for eMix? Mercy.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Nights upon nights. Debbie, you're hungry? What you have to eat? Make we just try to find something to eat, but we're gonna just write this out and call it a day.
Island Grill was our friend, okay? Listen. Island Grill was really our friend.
Listen, would I do anything to eat one of them festivals there right now?
It's true. Jodi, how have you been adjusting to COVID in your neck of the woods? Because I know, you know, it's a little bit more free in your area.
It's a little bit more free, but it is a lot to get used to, not just for me, but for everybody. I mean, you know, these are little things that we take for granted. You know, we have to be looking at it differently now. Like today I had to go to the store to pick up a few items, and I walked out to the car without my mask, and I was like, crap, I have to go all the way back to the car to get my mask. So there is a lot of adaptation, and people who really know me know that I am really suffering, because anybody who know me know that I love to party, I love to go out, and the entertainment scene is a no-no here. So yes. It's a lot getting used to, but I really think the good side is that it allowed us to really stop and just think about a lot of things that we weren't thinking about before.
Yes, yes, yes. And I want to apologize, guys. I'm outside, so if you're hearing any additional audio disturbances, please bear with me, all right? So, yeah, so Jodi, let's talk about thriving, because you have been thriving. As you talk about anybody who knows you, and from the videos that you've shared online as well, you are just, you know, a party animal. You know how to have fun. You know how to, you know, live life to the fullest. You've demonstrated this in so many ways. Let's talk about your decision to take a higher road.
So let me just put this out there. It's been a long road. Yeah. It's been a very, very, very long road. You know, I remember in 2012, just leaving Jamaica, it was, I don't even know, like, it was a lot to get used to, like.
One second, Joe. Do you have a phone also showing or a playback thing happening? Because I'm hearing audio.
Yeah, I'm hearing it too.
Okay, I think it may be our stream on our end.
I hear it too when I was wondering about it, but my phone is off.
All right, cool. Continue, honey. Sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're good. So, you know, the years 2012 to 2015, I would say, were the hardest mentally, physically, psychologically. It was a lot, you know. It was just, you know, leaving the hospital, coming into a new country, trying to figure out what to do, where to go. It was a lot of adjusting, but I remember in 2015 having a moment where I was like, I can't go on like this. I was secluded, I was sad all the time, and I was like, that is not me. And, you know, as we were briefly talking about before, you know, we started a live. One of the things that I had to really, really take control of was the fact that I am growing a child. And when you're growing someone, they adapt and they basically suck up everything, including your emotions. And one of the things that I've always heard is that broken women grow broken girls. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? I am not going to allow this situation to define me. Me being sad is not me. Me being always unhappy is not me. Me not talking is not
unheard
me.
Of.
You know, me not, you know, wanting to have fun, not wanting to go out. And I remember in 2015, there was a Daydreams. And, you know, I have to bring this up because as simple as it is, it was a life-changing moment for me. I remember 2015, it was Daydreams. Elva came to visit and she was like, my girl, we're going to Daydreams. I was like, Elva, you know I'm not going out. I'm like, you know, I don't want to see anybody. I don't want to see the Jamaican crowd. Me can't take the talking. Yeah. Everybody a point for me and me can't take it. And she was like, my girl, you hear what I said? Oh, may I pick you up 5 o'clock? I said, Elva, I'm not coming. She said, get her all right. You're coming to Daydreams. And I said, all right. Of course, I wasn't ready when she came because she always on time. And she said, my girl, why you not ready? And she go on with one. She said, let me tell you something. Yeah, come at Daydreams. I mean, in a no long talking. And I ride my bag. I need it for coming in here. And Debbie, I went to Daydreams. And I went there with my head down. As I walked into Daydreams, I saw, I don't remember her name, from Scan Media. And she was like, Jody, pause, take a picture. I'm like, Jesus Christ, me don't want nobody know. Say, me day here, me hide. You know, team say, me kill somebody or attempt to kill somebody. Like, I always felt like I was the perpetrator. So I was like, listen, me hold my head down. And she was like, no, man, come take a picture. So we take a picture. And then Elva came in and we took pictures and whatever. And, you know, I went out that time and I had such a good time. And I was like, this is me. This is what I'm used to. And in order for me to be able to grow a healthy child, a happy child, I have to be happy myself. So yeah. I made a decision from that moment that, listen, I'm going to do what I love. I love to interact. I love to party. I have to make a decision to not allow the situation to control me and move forward, knowing that I want to grow a successful child. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was basically where I made that turning point.
So for those who are joining us who they don't understand, you know, the top of the story, let's just rewind to the top of the story. So in like a synopsis, really, there's an attempt on Jody's life while she was pregnant. The unfortunate part about this is that it was an attempt by the father of Jody's child, somebody who she was dating at the time as well. Is this correct, Jody? Did I do a good job at summarizing everything?
Yeah.
I mean, no, you know, he's serving his time and doing his dues, serving the consequence of his actions. And, you know, Jody was actually, were you in coma, Jody? Because I remember there was a conversation about whether or not you were, because it was a head wound, I believe.
Yeah, no. So I was never in coma. Okay. I laugh about it and I'm really sorry. And I'll tell you why I laugh. But I was never in a coma. I got the shot entered here.
That's between your nose?
Yeah, between my eyes. Okay. Broke my nasal passage, broke my floor of mouth, what would you call this? My upper,
I handle this where you're pointing at. But yeah.
So it broke the nose, broke the upper palate, went through my tongue, lodged in my throat. And then there was one that came through here, one came through here. But yeah, I was never in a coma. And I'll share with you why I laugh, because, you know, sometimes you have to just take the fun out of really bad situations. So I remember when I was about to do the surgery, Dr. Donaldson was one of the persons who did the surgery at KPH. And I remember when I came in and they brought me in on the stretcher, and I said, I could hardly talk because the bullet was lodged in my mouth. And I said to him, sir, I don't know your name. I just have one question. Am I going to bed? Yes or no? And he was eating a Kiss biscuit and drinking a Pepsi. I never forgot. And he looked at a nurse and him said, from this girl coming here, our mouth no stop. Our mouth go 100 miles an hour. And she asked me if she got dead. Him turned back to me and said, no, miss, you're not dead. It was... It was the funniest thing, but no, I was never, and thanks be to God, I was always conscious. I was conscious right throughout. I was the one who pointed out the car.
That's amazing.
I was the one who pointed them out to the police. I was the one who told them everything that happened. I was the one who ran into the hospital. So thanks be to God, I was never unconscious, ever.
That's amazing. That's God right there, honey.
Yep.
That is God right there.
It is. It is.
Jordan, I mean, this whole experience that I was speaking to you earlier on about, you know, things happening to you, And it's really like a replay, a continuous replay that sometimes we go through when we go through trauma, you know, that mm-hmm. thing happened and it can actually keep happening to you. You must have mm-hmm. gone through a whole mental, you know, whirlwind of realizing and accepting what has happened to you, what it now means for you and a mommy, a new mommy to a baby, mm-hmm. baby who you'll have to bear and, you know, nurture while mm-hmm. also healing yourself as well. Mm-hmm. What was that whole transformative process like for you mentally?
Well, initially, I'm nearly slow mad, like real slow mad. Like, I'm not talking about the first one, you know, slow mad, right? Because when she was born, she cried a lot. Like, baby, I couldn't get her to stop ball. Like, I couldn't figure it out. Depending, you look on her too, I just stop ball. But it was just a situation where I had to, she was always the most important thing. Like, but at the same time, you know how you go in a plane and them say, put the life jacket and everything around yourself before you attend to the child. I had to adapt to that mentality.
Wow.
And I had to say, you know what? Mentally, I've had so many breakdowns. Like, when I tell you this has been a process, it has been a process. And I couldn't have done it without a lot of the amazing friends that I had speaking nothing but life and positivity in and around me. You know, I had friends who just wanted to see me win and they would do anything to just speak life. And yeah. that was helpful to me during the situation. As you said, I had to make a decision between growing a healthy child and mentally. Like, healthy people look at health as, you know, just making sure that they're not sticky or whatever, but health has a lot to do with your holistic health, especially mentally and spiritually. So oh, yes. I had to pray a lot. I had, every time I felt like I was going to get angry and say I would, you know, do this or do that, I had to like just pray and say, God, I ask him for your guidance. I ask him for your deliverance. I ask him for you to just guide my thoughts and guide my heart. And, yeah. you know, just help me understand that I have a whole human being that I need to mold mentally and I need to mold physically and I need to mold psychologically. And in order for me to do it successfully, I need to be healthy myself. I'm still healing. There are times when I still break down. It's been 8 whole years. And there are times when I still break down. There are times when, you know, I just want to do something as simple as, you know, just go hug my grandmother and I know, oh, this is no longer my reality. But I just had to really just take a grip of the situation and say, you know what? At the end of the day, I want to grow a happy child. Mm-hmm. And I had to be happy. I had to even, you know, even if I had to start to fake it until I make it, mm-hmm. I am a whole lot better than I was 8 years ago. And yeah.
Has she asked questions? Have you been bombarded with any hard questions that have put you really into a spot that you may not be ready to answer?
Listen, if you know my daughter, yes. this girl.
Your child, Jolie's child, yes. Yes.
The people think she's a replica of me and I want to tend to believe. She asks a lot of questions. She started asking questions as early as 2. Mommy, where is my daddy? You know, at first I started to say, you know, listen, when you're older, I'll tell you. So as she grew older, I said to her, you know what? Your dad was a very evil man and he tried to hurt us and he's paying the price for that. And she keep asking, Mommy, what did he do to us? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I said, when you're older, I'll explain a little bit more. Now that I find that she is, I feel that she's not a typical 7-year-old. She asks a lot of questions maturely. And when I realized last summer that, listen, she's asking these questions more and more, my friends and my family around me say, you know, it's time to really find a way to be mentally ready yourself. So after all these years, I finally found a counselor. So we yeah. have a counselor who is helping me now to really adapt to the situation. Mentally, and then we have a family therapist who basically, you know, tends to the need of both of us together. So I think that time is coming very near because, mm-hmm. you know, essays are being written. The internet is being used as reference. You can easily, in her head, she said her mommy is famous. And you just don't know. I just don't want anybody else to tell her when I'm supposed to be the one to protect her and tell her the best way she knows.
Yes.
So
yes.
It is a process. I think based on where she's going with the way she's speaking, the way she's interacting, and just the way that her mind, you know, thinks, the time is very, very near, but she understands that he has no business around us. That she understands and that she accepts. Mm. So when her friends or people say, you know, Janessa, where's your dad? She'll tell them, my dad is an evil man. And, you know, I've also, you know, told her that, listen, families are different. You have families who have mothers and fathers. You have families who have mothers and mothers, dads and dads, mothers alone, fathers alone. Our family situation is where it's just you and I, mother alone. So she's learned, I've positioned it in such a way that she understands that families are different. Nobody can stipulate that the only real family or acceptable family in society is a mother and a dad. Mothers and mothers, and there are different types of families, and her family structure right now is that I'm her mom and her dad. So the situation is slowly but surely coming to the fore. And I think with God's help, I'm going to be extremely ready. And I think I've, with the help of God, done an amazing job with letting her be confident. So eventually she'll accept it and just understand that this is her situation, this is her reality, but it doesn't define who she is.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Have you given any thought at all about, you know, as she grows older, and even when she's mature and has her own life in her own hand, the possibilities may exist that she may want to come face to face with him?
I've thought about that many times. The good news is that until she's 18, I am responsible for her. And my main objective is to protect her. So I am going to do everything in my power to protect her. Until then, after she's 18, if that's a decision she makes, because people deal with things differently, that may help her to heal, that may help her to understand. But until she's 18, my sole priority is to protect her. And, you know, until then, anything she does after that, I'll always support her no matter what her decisions are. But, you know, it is what it is. I'd hope that it doesn't happen, but I can't stop it.
Yeah. I understand what you mean. I do. Backtrack. We're going to the surviving part, right? So this is you realizing what has happened, and you know, have to come to grips with the fact that this is somebody who you were vulnerable with, that you were open with, that you, you know, gave parts and showed portions of your life that you would not be showing anybody, you know, carrying his seed. Mm-hmm. And you're realizing that this is somebody who actually wanted you out of the picture completely. What did that do to you mentally for you to you know?
You know, you're taking me back down some really painful memories, but I'll share.
If you want us to stop?
No, you're fine.
Okay.
Because one of the things that I've grown over the years to understand is that in order for you to grow, you have to face what has happened, be able to talk about it and move forward. So I'm fine at this point. I'm very selective with who I've talked and spoken to. So that's totally fine. I tell you this, during our time, I was very respectful to him because Debbie, a fly couldn't pitch for me, and that man don't kill the fly. He was very protective. So, you know, I respected him as a person, you know, always thought that he was great and, you know, very truthful and all of that. I remember the November when I found out I was pregnant, because I wasn't feeling well. I had to go to the doctor, and you know, I remember going to the doctor. He's like, listen, I want to come to the doctor with you, but I have to do a taping of a show. I don't think I'm able to come, but please keep me in the loop. Everything that's happening, let me know what's going on. I was like, okay, no problem. I remember when I walked into the office, I was waiting. Dr. Goldson was my gynecologist at the time. And I remember waiting, and I get that the man called me like 6 or 7 times. I said, Bridgerine, I don't reach in there yet. Just wait until we come out, let me tell you.
Yeah.
So when I went in there, you know, Dr. Ghost ran all the tests, and eventually he came back and he was like, you know, you're pregnant. I'm like, Dr. Ghost, no, I'm not pregnant, sir. And he's like, yes, you are. So he's like, listen, I'm going to give you this box of pregnancy tests. You can done the whole of them. You're my last patient. We can just done them tonight. And I remember I did about 4 or 5 of them. And he was like, you believe no, or you still want to go? I said, I believe. And before I could come out of the office, my phone rang again. And I was like, what did the doctor say? Are you okay? Is everything okay? And I was like, listen, the doctor says I'm pregnant. I didn't hear anything, like nothing at all. There was silence. And I was like, hello? He was like, do me a favor. I was like, what? Dash it away. I was like, wait, hold on, wait. What did you just say? And he was like, do me a favor. Dash it away. Financially, you know, I'm not able to look after a child right now, and you know, I would want to give you and the child the best financially. I just can't do it. I said, Bridgerine, if that's the first thing you can say to me after telling you something like that, somebody who has pledged love and go to the end of, well, claim to go to the end of the world or pretend to go to the end of the world and come back, and that's the first thing that can come out of your mouth, do me a favor. Don't call back my phone. Do not speak to me. Leave me alone. And I hang up. And I was like, when I tell you, I was so broken to know that somebody you shared so much with, somebody who, when I tell you, you know, sweeter than that man mouth, you couldn't find, you know, girl. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you the things that were the man tell me. Listen. And to hear that that was his response after an announcement like that, I was extremely broken for days. And I remember telling my family and my friends, and they were like, you know what, Jody, you have our support. At this age, you've done so well for yourself. You've tried, you've been through so much. Anything you decide to do, we support you. And I'm like, no, I'm keeping my child. If this is what God give me, this is what God give me. Him can stay about in business. Do not speak to me. And I remember he spent days upon days trying to get in touch with me. I was like, Bridgerine, listen, do me a favor. Just leave me alone. Fast forward, after everything had happened, there are a lot of things that transpired in between, and I won't go into that. But I remember everything happened, and I remember when Brian, who was the chief investigator at the time, came in the hospital and said to me, we caught the idiots that did this to you. And the first thing I looked up at him and I said, you know, what they wanted from me, did they see when I got to the bank? Because I went to the bank right before the incident happened, and I had $60,000 on me. And I was like, is it that they were coming for the money? He said, no. He said, the main suspect is, and he told me the person's name, Debbie. I felt like somebody had triggered the gun all over again, but this time they do it hotter and longer. And I remember sitting there because my family apparently had known before I knew, because everybody was worried that, you know, this would have happened. I'm pregnant and everything, them don't want to get worse. So everybody was hush-hushing and, you know, trying not to say anything. And I remember when he told me it was, I don't think the gunshot itself was that hot. Just knowing that he was the person who did all of this, it was shocking, and it still is to know that, you know, telling you that they don't want the child is one thing, not supporting you, not helping you, having to go through a pregnancy alone. Well, you know what? I really didn't. I need to take that back. I didn't go through a pregnancy alone. I had... I had a lot of people around me. But when I say alone, you know, like you would love to have to share that experience with somebody you were intimate with, you know, this is a part of them, you know, not doing it, and then coming to do all of this. It was heartbreaking, I can tell you that. But people make their own decisions for whatever reason. I can't speak to what they do, but I know that I have control over what I do. And the only thing I just want is to be able to just grow my child to be successful. That's the only thing I'm asking God for. Like, just give me the strength to be able to just grow her to be confident and successful.
Yeah. And you have been doing an incredible job. Like if I'm to look back at some of the pictures and the videos that you have shared with us online, she's a very lippy person, you know, and reminds me a lot of her mommy.
Yeah, her mother's child. That's
you know what I mean? Yeah, man. She have her own like a personality going on right there.
She does.
Right?
She does.
What was the process like though with coming to terms with the fact that, you know, this is not just a child from, you know, somebody who tried to hurt me, but this is a child sent to me by God that will have her own experience that I'm to love as an individual and not see her through the lens of the hurt and the pain?
Again, you know, I just always had to ask God for guidance in terms of she's such an amazing child. And I know this sounds cliche because every parent says that about their children.
Oh, but in terms of
her just being very understanding, her being able to just adapt to any situation, I'll say to her, you know, Janessa, this is the way we're going to do it today. And she'll be like, okay. Sometimes she'll ask mommy why we have to do it that way. And I'll explain that to her. And, you know, so the good news is that one of the things I always told myself is that if I ever had a child, I want to give them what I didn't get, the freedom to be able to speak and be yourself. And I want her to be herself. So I allow her to be herself. I allow her, like, you know, she wants her hair this way, that's on you. She wants to dress this way, this on you. So with that being said, I just try not to associate her with anything. Yeah. I try to associate her as Janessa. That is Janessa. That is not Janessa, the child that was or is a part of, or this is a situation. Nothing defines you but God. And that's what I've always tried to tell her. So I don't look at her as, and I try not to associate her with anything. That child was given to me by God. God saved her, God saved me. I've heard so many similar stories that has different faiths. And I just knew that this was my situation to just, you know, just grow to be an individual on her own, not associated with any situation. Nothing defines her. She is who she is. And that's the end of the story.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. And you've been thriving because we see you back on the stage. We see you hosting radio shows. We see you doing the things that we've known Jordi and loved Jordi for. You know, from the days of Supreme Ventures when you were the one telling everybody the lucky numbers.
And people see up on the road and say, my girl, I know you have the number, give it to me.
Exactly. Exactly. People start laywaiting because they feel like, you know who, you know, the numbers them going to play.
Yeah, just tell me the number because you know them, give it to me, you know.
Yeah. But, so you've been thriving back in the career. What was this step for you, an important step as well, to get back into the game and just
it was
when
I just moved here, as I said, the first two to three years are really hard. I just felt like I didn't want to be in the public eye at all. I didn't want to. Sometimes the people are not even know you, know, Debbie, but you just feel them a Jamaican and they know you and they're gonna point out and they're gonna talk about you. And I had to move away from that. I had to realize that, listen, you are the one who's going to control what's happening up here. And the minute you learn to control that, you can do anything. And I remember Eddie Edwards was very instrumental, you know, in getting me back on stage. You know, I formed ties with him and we started working together. He does a lot of entertainment things. A lot of shows and stuff. And he was like, listen, let me know if you're ready. I think you have the talent. I think it's time. Just go out there and, you know, start doing anything. And when I started, you know, as I said, from the party to with Elva, going back on the stage and just really just doing what I love, it really kind of helped me to settle a little bit more in this new environment. It allowed me to, even though it's not in the same geographical space, it really allowed me to get to some form of normalcy. And it also helped with my mental. It also helped with my mental being. So that was funny. It also helped with my mental being. So, you know, when you're when you're able to really start doing the things that you used to do, it really helped me to just get back in the mode of things and just understand that, you know, you can be as big or even bigger than you were. And that's what really, you know, baby steps helped me to get where I am today. So I'm still doing my radio shows, still emceeing, still doing my voiceovers, and just being me.
Yeah, you're available for work, honey. You're so talented. It would just be a shame if you had decided to just rest that one side.
Yeah, I in the first 3 years, I can tell you, it was mental. I was like, I'll never go back out there. I can't manage the things that I have to say. I believe in it alone. Yeah. But I had to just, you know, hold the bull by the horn and say, little girl, God give you a sound mind. Work with your situation, accept it, and move the hell on. And yeah, that's basically what I did. And, you know,
and I think that move as well, seeing that may have, and I know for me as well, it was very encouraging, because to think that you went through something that could have really been a block for the rest of your life, and you chose to move on and thrive and live a higher life, I'm sure it has encouraged a lot of people without you even having to speak to them. So more so people who you think is judging you behind the scenes, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And as I said, you know, it was more about my mental being. Like, you know, sometimes you create illusions, you create situations that are really not there because of the mental state that you're in. But the minute that you come out of that zone, you start, you know, instead of leading on the negative side, lead on the positive side, you know, what are the people? Because you know what is so funny? And one of the things that I realize we do naturally as humans is that you will have 5,000 people say good things to you and encourage you, you know, and then you have 5 what's the negative things that you hold on pan the 5, you know? And that is, you think that is gospel. And I had to learn to switch that around. Focus on the people who are cheering you on, cheer on yourself, and remember who you're doing it for. And that has basically helped me a lot. So, you know, even just doing the things that I like to do has helped me a lot, and I'll continuously say that, you know?
Yeah. You have not released your hot girlness. Can I say that? Your hot girlness. And we also saw that you kind of went back on the market and you started dating again.
Yes,
you released it? You did?
Yes. I mean, when I just came up, the dress up wasn't me. I didn't want to dress up. I didn't feel like dressing up. I didn't feel beautiful. I didn't feel, you know, the Jody that I used to feel. I used to see the scar on my face and say, you know, Lord, at that point it was much worse. You know, my nose was like lean, and I did just feel annoyed. But then that too was a process. I was like, listen, if you tell yourself you're beautiful, you are beautiful. You don't have to.
Because you are gorgeous, honey.
Thank you.
Absolutely gorgeous, and you take care of yourself like really, really well. Like,
no,
your
I
body and your workouts and all of them things there.
Appreciate that. I had to just tell myself, you know what? You're going to speak nothing but positivity in your life, my girl. Your aunt, Beyonce, no aunt like you. And you're going to get up, and you're going to put on your makeup, and you're going to start look after yourself, and you're going to just go out there again. But yeah, I've started dating. It can be a little bit challenging at times, because sometimes you may see a certain behavior and instantly you say, oh, I wonder if you're like, or, you know, you're going on that road. But it's been good. I can say sometimes you have to just give God thanks for the people who appreciate you. And it is what it is. You know, you don't focus on what some, you know, a Jamaican would say, you don't use another man fat for fry somebody else.
Yes, because I was going to go there, you know, because having gone through that experience, it is so easy to kind of hop off every other,
which is
man.
Why I say it has been challenging, because I mean, somebody would say to you, all right, man, go to him, will say, listen, babe, I'm going down the road, I'm gonna come back at 7, and 7:01 come and you say, you tell me, say, I'll come back at 7, I lie to you. And you'll be like, Jones, I just gone down the road, babe, I tell you 7 o'clock, but I like around the corner, you know.
Yeah,
but it can be challenging. The good news is that one of the things that you have to try to do is to find somebody who's understanding. It's not an excuse, but if you find somebody who's understanding, who just, you know, try to take them time and understand what you've been through and try to, make you realize that, you know, it takes a little bit extra effort, and I've been grateful for that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And having that conversation, do you get to open up and share your story with the persons who you're dating, or you don't let them in to that side?
I mean, you know what's so funny? I'm dating a Jamaican, right?
Okay.
So instantly, they knew, you know?
Yeah.
The good news is that it's not a situation where we go over the story over and over again and we talk about it over and over again. You know, you are Jody, not Jody the person in Jamaica that was shot and this, that, that. You are Jody. So I've been grateful for that. Like, it's just about, you know, who are you as an individual? What can you bring to the table for me? What can we do together? And we just leave it there. We don't harp on what has been. We just try to... you know, just move away from that, and, you know, just accept that I am Jody, not Jody.
You are Jody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Have you thought about in thriving and in continuing in the spirit of thriving to maybe form a woman organization that deals with women who have been through trauma, or have you done any outreach to that effect? Yeah.
Yeah, I have. Eddie has pushed me a lot. He's like, listen, you need to do this, you need to do that. But at the time when it was really at the forefront of my mind, I realized that I wasn't mentally ready. Because one of the things that I had to accept and understand is that once I bring up the story or once I come to the fore, the talks are going to start and everything is going to come back and you're going to have to go through the entire process again mentally. And, you know, so now that I've, you know, been getting the counseling, and I think I'm much stronger with the support system that I've had over these years. I always tell my sister, sometimes I wake up out of my sleep with some of the ideas and the dreams that I have about, because I feel like, girl, nobody not just get four shots and just come out normal. So you're not supposed to normal, girl.
No,
like,
you're here for a reason, honey. Time,
yeah, I'm going to tell my sister, it bother me. Like, we're not supposed to normal. Like, you know, just get four shots and come out and just regular, you know? You should be doing something. And every single day, Debbie, I get messages, instant messages, that Insta messages, Facebook messages of people who are sharing stories with me and just saying, you know, you inspire me, just looking at you inspire me, or I've been through this, or I've been stabbed, or, you know, just last week somebody messaged me about, you know, her child's father who stabbed her in her eye. So she lost sight in one of her eyes, and, you know, she was like, you are an inspiration, and I just want to know how you went through it and how you went over it. So, and then when I hear, like, my friend Simone Collymore was murdered by, you know, a contract killing, you know, done by her husband. And I just feel like there are so many people I need to be reaching out to. The good news, one of the things my sister always said to me, Jodes, when it's time, it is going to be time, and you have to be ready. So it's just one of those things that the appropriate time is going to come. I know that this is something I have to do. It's not a if or a must or a maybe. It's something that I have to do. I'm ordained to do it. It's just when and how.
Yeah, because I would actually love to see as well, you know, a lot of the their homes and shelters for women who have been abused, who would love to hear how they can, you know, just collect themselves and understand that this happened and it doesn't have to keep happening to you for as long as you allow yourself to, you know, to stay in that space, in that zone, you can actually get yourself together and move on, you know, because if I've done it, you can too. And I'd love to see it being immortalized in a book where, you know, the Jordan Gray story. So think about that as well. You know what I mean? Because
all of those things are things that are at the forefront of my mind. The book is something that I can tell you for sure is coming very soon. And it's just a matter of, you know, helping myself to heal while understanding that I have a mission to help others to heal. Because as much as, you know, my story was made public, there are so many other people who are going through this and even worse that has not been made public that would love the opportunity to have some help, you know, mentally. So that is definitely something that I know I have to do, I will do, And it's just an appropriate time that will allow me to really, you know, tap into that market.
Yeah, yeah. Describe your baby girl. What kind of child is she? We said she's lippy, yes, and she asks a lot of questions. But what are her aspirations? You know, what are the things that she comes to mommy with? And describe the relationship between yourself and her. Is she like a best friend, a soulmate? That kind of, I mean, how is
so it? Let me start from the bottom up. She's a broke best friend. I love her. She we hear people talk about broke best friend. That's my broke best friend. What I like about her, she's extremely confident. Like sometimes she teaches me how to be confident. Like, you know, I remember there was a situation where as a matter of fact, I tell you a story, I go back a little bit. When she was two, because since I've moved here, I've had her in a private, you know, school. And I remember one day she was at school and she loved chicken foot soup. When I said she loved chicken foot soup, she loved chicken foot. And you had to give her porridge or chicken foot soup to carry to school. So I remember I gave her her thermos with her chicken foot soup. The teacher was Jamaican. And I remember the teacher came to me and Miss Sandra said, Jody, you wouldn't believe what happened today in a class. So I said, what happened, Miss Sandra? Because every day she has a story to tell me what you need to do. And she said, listen to me, today with lunchtime, she eating our soup. And somebody asked her, an American asked her, Janessa, oh my God, what is that you're eating? She said, mind your own business. It's a Jamaican thing, you won't understand. So, and she, at that time, she was two. So, you know, it's like, she's very confident. You know, she'll come home and she'll say, mommy, you know, somebody said them don't like my socks. And I said, if you don't like my socks, you know what you can do about it? Buy one. And she's really confident about, you know, who she is.
Do you guys have runnings, like, you know, personality runnings at times? Oh, and you have to just remind her who is mommy, listen, and who is child?
Every day. Like when I say every day, because when I tell you, she sometimes I have to remind her, I said, I am your mother. You are not my mother, sis. I brought you here. You didn't bring me here, sis. You know, and she'd be like, oh, mommy, she's very authoritative. So sometimes she has a way to forget based on our relationship that she's a child. And I have to say, you know, as a Jamaican parent, I have to say, listen, bring it back down a notch. But she's very respectful. She understands when it's time to cut it, when too much is too much. But I try to allow her to just be herself. Just be you. Because one of the things that we can comfortably say as Jamaicans growing up, or Caribbean kids growing up, not just Jamaicans, you know, our parents teach us to be seen and not heard. And for me, it's the other way around. Like, I don't believe in shutting up children. What if she's the next public defender? You know, we don't know. So I just didn't believe in shutting her up, or don't believe in shutting her up. But if it is that I feel like, you know, okay, we need to just bring back the importance of respect in any situation. And what I tend to do, and my sister has taught me to do this as well, is to, whenever I'm telling her to do something, explain why. So I'll be like, okay, so when you were talking to me this way, the reason why I told you no TV is because it is important that you learn to respect. So I try to explain every time I do something, why I've done it. And I find that it's working a little bit better. You know,
effect. It's a very, very good way to teach kids. Yeah,
exactly. So you don't just tell them shut up and then don't tell them why you tell them shut up. You know, I told you to stop because I realize. And, you know, but in terms of, you know, who she is, she loves designing clothes. Believe it or not, she'll sit and just tech clothes or things and, you know, make them into some really creative stuff. She loves dancing.
I wonder where she got that from.
She is in love with the Jamaican culture. So just to be able to say she can talk Jamaican, sometimes you'll just see her wake up and come down and say, you know, downstairs, mommy, what one goodie? You know, so she's in love with the Jamaican culture. She loves the stage. I wonder where she got that from too, but she loves the stage. You know, that's another thing, like I've allowed her to, you know, do a lot of little cultural performances and really teach her the Jamaican culture. So she know who is Miss Lou, she know the hero, she know the heroine, she know about Parachute, she knows stuff, because my dream was to grow her in Jamaica. Because I wasn't able to, I still try to keep her in touch with her roots, because Jamaica is very important to me. So you know, I try to share that culture and the knowledge of Jamaica with her. But as an individual, she's a fun child, and anybody who knows, she's very loving. She'll not know you, and she'll give you the biggest hug. And you know, she asks a lot of questions. And I love the fact that whatever I teach her, she'll share it with somebody else. So, you know, like there are situations where, you know, she'll say, oh, my mommy teach me to love, and my mommy teach me to forgive others, or mommy say you must do this. So she incorporates things when they're most convenient, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, overall, she's a regular, normal child. You know, give normal picnic troubles. Sometimes she was slow, Madio. But outside of that, she's made me nothing but proud. I'm so proud of her. Really proud.
Yeah. As you mentioned a while ago about, you know, being Jamaican, loving Jamaica. Do you miss home sometimes?
Like, if you want to come to your yard. Baby, mama ask you something. What make you ask me that question? Like, I have to ask you. No, let me tell you something. I'm going to brace up myself to tell you that something, all right?
Yes, tell me.
Make sure I see you looking at me. Yeah. When it comes on to Jamaica, before all of this, Jamaica could have bundung. Me want it bundung with me. When me tell you something, love Jamaica. Let me tell you, we are a unique set of people, you know, Debbie. And let me tell you something about Jamaica. And I'm sure it's the same in every other Caribbean island, but I'm telling you about what is true to me. Jamaica is one of those places where you can broke like dog and you're just happy. How are you happy, so?
You go find a canal, you go find a bush,
listen,
you go find two mango trees, two cherry trees.
Just get on a river, don't go sit down. Here, the reality is not the same. You find yourself, you're one paycheck away from the street. So you constantly have to work, you constantly have to put your mood in, okay. What do I need to do to make sure that the bills are paid, make sure Janessa and I have a roof over our head, we have clothes on our back and shoes on our feet, we have food, you know, so that's the mentality here. It's not so much, and what I hate, I will tell you this, I'm grateful for them for giving me a place of refuge, but what I hate is that I feel like Jamaica, where our Jamaican teachers teach the kids to be, you know, patriotic to their country. I don't feel like they have that here. And that bothers me, because to me, that's where the sense of self begins, where you understand where you live, you understand it. Hey, when me tell people, say me a Jamaican, you know, you that thing, say me a some. Listen, I am a proud Jamaican, and it is from the individualistic characteristics that, you know, build a Jamaican that really allowed me to just proudly at this stage say I'm a Jamaican. When you really don't know where you're coming from, and the importance of your culture, not just to yourself, but to your society. Sometimes you find that you're lost. And I feel like that is them here. So I miss home. I miss home for
before
just not...
COVID, before COVID, how often would you come back?
Before COVID, I've only come back once. Based on my terms and situation of being here, I had to wait until I was a citizen to be able to go back home. So when I became a citizen, it was important to me to go and see my grandmother. Because she used to travel, but now she's gotten a little bit older, a little bit weaker, so that situation and reality is not the same. So, you know, the most important thing to me was, so I've only been home, I came home last Christmas, and it was an amazing experience.
Yeah.
I remember reaching the airport, and I just start bawling, like, I was picking up my bags off the carousel, and I just started crying, because I was like, I never knew that the day would come when I could comfortably just go back home, hold my head high, and just do what I needed to do, which was to look for my grandmother, you know?
I have two more questions for you before we wrap up.
Yeah, no problem.
So it's about Elva, our beloved Elva.
Yes.
You and Elva were best friends.
Yeah, we were. Listen, Elva was amazing.
You were like sisters, like
we share
the relationship
same
between both of you guys.
Yes.
There we go.
Yes.
And was Elva a big part of Jody thriving?
Yes. Yes. As I told you, she would send daily messages. When I say daily, I mean daily. There was not a day that she wouldn't say. Even when she was in the hospital, she would send a message. I would look at her once I wake up. I used to say to her, girl, you don't sleep. You can't sleep in your bed at night. What's in your bed? And she would send them a quote for the day. And those quotes would carry me throughout the day. And I remember, I'll tell you this, and I'll be straight up with you. I remember one day I called her crying when there was the case had been called up, and I called her and I was like, yo, Elva, everybody are calling me and I tell me what the people I'm gonna sit down there and I tell lies. And she, I remember Elva get mad. Listen, Elva got so angry today and she said, listen to me, block them, cut them off, them and your friend. She say, your friend them nah go call you and tell you nothing negative. She say, if I hear me, I call you and tell you nothing negative, girl. She said, leave them, their friend. She said, block them. She said, you want me to come my friend, come block them for you? She said, don't be no one hear nothing. So in terms of just speaking positively, every single day Elva was Elva. Yeah. Let me tell you, that girl, man, and you know, no matter when she come, listen, I am here. Come pick me up. May I spend a night with you, or two nights with you, or three nights with you. You know, she was instrumental. Like in terms of confidence, she helped to build back my confidence from that party come right back to the even the day before she died. She sent me a message, and the last message she sent to me, she said, Jody, I just want you to know, so I'm proud of you. She said, I'm proud of how far you come. And she said, I want you to take care of Bambina for me. Bambina, she used to call her. She said, take care of Bambina for me. And she said, remember me tell you, I might not dare for seat, but Bambina will make you proud. Just go and nurture. I'm going to say, yeah, man, Elva. You know, so she was just always a happy soul. She was just always preaching positivity. She was just amazing. And like, even during this time, I miss her a lot because we used to do like the birthday countdown and she used to like, goodie at 10 day to a birthday, goodie at 9 day, goodie at 8 day, goodie at a birthday, you know? So I miss her a lot. She was very instrumental. She was an amazing human being.
Yeah. My last thing to you, George, is what would you say? And I know you have much to say, but if you could find a one-liner to say to women who have experienced trauma, who are trying to recover, who are trying to find their thrive bones, trying to survive it all, what would you say to them?
I'll just tell them, the first thing is you have to be strong. And strength, I mean, sometimes you have to find that one thing that you're doing it for. So even if you're not doing it for yourself, if you have a child you're doing it for, if you have a mother you're doing it for, a father, a husband, you know, whatever it is, you know, try to find some way or something to give you a reason to come out of that, you know? Just be strong, just do whatever you, and just try to put your mental space into as much positivity as you can, because it will carry you through.
That's right. I can't think of anything else, you know, a better way to end on. Thank you so much, Jody and Gray. But I'm thriver and survivor. I love you. I love you, sis. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate you so much.
And I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And continue.
And thanks to all the viewers. Thanks to everybody. I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to read everybody's comments. But thank you very much. We're going to see them when we, you know, save this live and stuff. And join us next week for another Quarantine Moms right here on Moms Can Relate. Thank you, guys. Be safe. Bye.